Welcome back to my podcast. Today we're going to be talking about a serial killer, and not just any serial killer, but we're going to be talking about Dennis Rader, also known as the BTK killer, who actually named himself BTK, which is an abbreviation for bind, torture, kill. Talk about some messed up stuff. Okay, so before we get into all the interesting stuff, which is how he was caught, how he killed, and just all of the gruesome and ominous stuff about BTK, we have to talk about his upbringing, because this plays a huge important role in his whole story. Because when looking at his adult life, he's just an average man. There's not really anything special about him. But let's go back to his childhood. Okay, so he was born March 9th, 1945 in Pittsburgh, Kansas. And he grew up in Wichita. He's the oldest of four sons, and he enjoyed a seemingly normal childhood, except for the fact that he displayed some disturbing behavior, such as hanging stray animals, which I guess should have been a sign to the parents, but not the point. So he attended Wichita State University, but he dropped out and joined the Air Force. And while he was at Wichita State, he actually studied criminal justice, which, if you ask me, is kind of just ironic. So he joins the Air Force and eventually just returns back to Wichita. He marries his wife, Paula, and he starts working for an outdoor supply company for about a year. And then he begins working as an employee of an ADT security service. So, for the most part, he is just average. There's nothing really special about him. He was really active in church, and he served as a Boy Scout leader. He just wasn't really anything special, which plays that huge part, because it's like, you wouldn't expect this man to do what he did, which is what we're going to get into next. Okay, so let's jump into the first murders that Dennis Rader committed. And yes, I say murders, because not only did he kill one person, but he killed four. In fact, he killed an entire family for his first murders. So, on January 15th, 1974, the Otero family fell victim to Dennis Rader. He strangled to death four family members, two of which were children, and the most disturbing part about this first murder is that there was semen left at the scene. However, none of the victims had any signs of sexual assault. So, he got off on the killing, obviously. The next day, though, the Otero's 15-year-old son, who was not at home that night, came home and discovered the bodies, which is just the most sad part about this. And he left. Before leaving, Rader left a watch and a radio. This is a little bit odd, but I take it back. Just the most disturbing part of this crime was the fact that he took souvenirs. And the souvenirs consisted of the victim's underwear. And that just really is quite disturbing to me and hopefully a lot of other people. So, Rader's little break time did not last very long. In fact, he struck again on April 4th, 1974. So just a few months of a cooling off period. He attacked a young woman named Catherine Bright, and he's starting to evolve with this next murder. Because not only does he strangle her, but he also stabs her. And all of this happened just as she's returning home. So that is beyond frightening. So he kind of went a little bit overkill on this one, because he also shot her brother, Kevin, twice. But Kevin survived. Kevin didn't die. And he later goes to an interview with Time magazine in which he describes Dennis Rader like this: an average-sized guy, bushy mustache, psychotic eyes. And just the psychotic eyes really does give me the creeps about this man, and I already don't like looking at the pictures of him, so I'm just assuming that it was even worse encountering him in real life. Alright, so Dennis is getting bold, and by bold, I mean that he's going public. So, in October 1974, Rader placed a letter in a public library book, which is the most random spot I guess you could place your going public letter about being a serial killer, but we're not gonna get hung up on that. Anyways, in this letter, he takes responsibility for killing the Oteros. The letter ends up at the local newspaper, and
Might I just include the fact that this letter is just really poorly written? But it does give the authorities some idea of who they're dealing with, but not really much. So, in this letter, he writes something really disturbing. He writes, "It's hard to control myself. You probably call me psychotic with sexual perversion hang-up." He also warned that he would strike again, noting that the code words for him would be bind them, torture them, kill them, BTK. And that just really gives me the creeps. But I guess he made his point, because now we do know him as the BTK killer. And those initials did stick. He became known as the BTK killer. So I guess he got what he wanted out of that. Anyways, his next crimes occurred in 1977. In fact, he starts off pretty early in the year, March. So in March, he tied up and strangled Shirley. Don't know how to say Shirley's last name. So moving on. So he goes to Shirley's house, and he locks her children in the bathroom. And I guess I just kind of have to give him some credit, because at least he didn't make the children watch. But also, I can't really give credit to a serial killer, so we're just going to move on. Anyways, then in December, he strangled Nancy Fox in her home. And then the weirdest part about this one is that he called the police to report the homicide, which just shows me that he is just super proud of himself, and he just really shouldn't be, once again. So, shortly after, in the beginning of the year of 1978, he sends a poem to the local newspaper about killing Shirley. I really hate that. And then several weeks later, he sends a letter to the local television stating that he was responsible for killing Shirley, Fox, and some other unknown victim. And I really want to know who that unknown victim is. But in this letter to the television station, he makes some allusions to several notorious killers that were also kind of present at the time, also known as Ted Bundy. Anyways, I guess he just really wants to be a part of the club. I think he just feels like left out. So, despite his little cat and mouse game with the authorities, he was able to keep the lid on his secret murderous life. He was unable to go detected for way too long. And, you know, I really just, really do just hate that. So, here's the funniest part about this. Rader goes back to college. He goes back to Wichita State. And he gets a degree in administration of justice. And I really, really just don't like that, because it's like, dude, why would you do that? Why would you do that? Anyways, he continues to taunt the authorities and appeared to be poised to strike again. And what do you know? He does. Okay, let's start to wrap this up, because it's kind of getting a little bit lengthy, and just know that BTK does kill again. So, after like the next several years, BTK just drops off the map. Like, kind of like just nowhere to be found. And during this little part of his life, he is just really focused on work and his family life. And I really just don't understand why he couldn't have done this in the first place. But, you know, whatever. So he leaves ADT and he starts working for a suburb in Park City. I guess that's somewhere in Wichita. But anyways, in this new position, he becomes a stickler for the rules. And when I say that, it is the dude that you really don't want to live around. So, during this job, he is so strict about the rules. In fact, he goes and measures the height of people's lawns, and he chases stray animals with a tranquilizer gun. And that just brings me back to the memory of how he strangled stray animals when he was a child. But I guess that's not the point. Anyways, he really enjoyed this job because he liked being able to tell people what to do, and he really just, he needed that authority because he is BTK. Anyways, so moving on, the 30th anniversary of the Otero murders, he resurfaces. And this is in like 2004, if I'm doing my math correctly. So, Rader sent local media outlets and authorities several letters filled with items related to his crimes, including pictures, a word puzzle, and an outline for the BTK story, because he just can't get enough of himself. So, he also leaves packages with, like, clues, and this includes a computer disc that ultimately led authorities to Raiders Church. Investigators start noticing his Jeep on security tapes in some of the package drop-off areas, and they cemented their case by obtaining, which is really just great, a DNA sample of Raider's daughter. And how they did that, I'm not really sure. But anyways, Raider's arrested on February 25th, 2005. And he's later charged with 10 counts of first-degree murder. And now, this is why his upbringing was so important. Because he was just that average dude, right? When his, like, family members and his fellow church neighbors and everyone found out about this, it was so hard for them to believe that the man that they knew was the serial killer that just haunted their entire area for so long. Like, he was just that average dude. So, thank God, Raider just, he pled guilty to all the charges. And he, as a part of his plea, he gave the horrifying details of his crimes in court. And he did this without any remorse or emotion. So, that's great. But anyways, he has to serve 10 life sentences, and I just really hate that the fact that when he got caught, I was like 2 years old. This man was alive when I was alive. Was he anywhere near me? No, but he was alive. And I think he still is, but I also don't want to look it up because that would just show me a picture, and I just can't look at this man anymore. So is he a psychopath or a sociopath? I'm not really sure. But anyways, Dennis Rader sucks, and that concludes the podcast. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it, because I sure didn't. But have a great day or night. Depends on when you're listening to this, if you listen to it at all. See you next time. Bye.